I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 7. Our guest this week is James Dean. He has entertained regional theater audiences for decades. He's an actor of extraordinary range, sensitivity, and intelligence. We're honored to have him with us today. Welcome, James.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you very much.
Now, James, we are once again listening to our wonderful theme, wonderful, wonderful theme by Cole Porter, Longing to Be on Old Broadway. If you could snap your fingers and be on Broadway and doing anything that you would like, acting, directing a play, producing a play, having your own play, what would it be?
Well, then, Broadway or anywhere else, I have 3 roles I'd love to do. George in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Big Daddy in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and right now the role I'd love to do more than anything, and I am the exact age of Willie Loman in Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman.
Oh, boy.
And I can feel Willie's desperation.
Well, James, I'm speechless. I really hope that those 3 wishes come true for you, whether it's up there on the Great White Way or wherever. But you would be superb in all 3 of them. And yes, I can see you in all of those.
Thank you.
Now, James, you see before you a red box. Now, in that red box, there is something. It could be anything. It could be a coin. It could be a rock. It could be a postage stamp. In a moment, you're going to open that box, and you're going to take it out, whatever it is, explain very briefly to our audience what it is, and then you're going to make up a story about it.
It might be true.
It could be true. It could be true. It could be false. It could be a combination. We're going to see just how good you are at improv. And so, are you ready?
I am.
And I don't want this to be too long.
I'll try to keep it short. Right. I have other things I want to do.
Well, we have a lot to cover tonight. And are you ready? Open that box.
Okay, here I go. I'm opening the box. And what do we have here? It is a red pen, wooden pen, in a red case. And I am really amazed that you actually have this pen, because this is the pen that I used when we did the play Dracula and I played Renfield.
Oh my gosh.
And this pen, believe it or not, when you begin to write with it, writes in blood. And that's when I knew as Renfield that I was in big trouble. I can't believe you have this.
Well, I'm just astonished. Well, that's wonderful story, and I'm leaning toward the feeling that it's a true story, and that I don't know. It's rather spooky how I came by it. But I must say this: you know, that we have said that the Gilbert Theater has had a ghost,
mm-hmm.
and people would cite him here at the house when we were here for those 8 years. And but then when we moved down to our present location on Bow Street, former City Hall,
mm-hmm.
The ghost followed, because I've had people reporting the sightings down there. It's frightened girls, particularly, I'm afraid. Better get a drink here.
That was good. Shame to Shay. I like that.
Ashamed to say. That the girls, I shouldn't go on with that. But anyway, they're being frightened to their death down there. But the other night, I was up late working on the podcast show, and I heard a noise. Now, over here, the stairway leading down to the old theater has a chain that we put on there to keep burglars away. And I went over there, and Bob always attaches the chain at the end of the evening. This was 2 or 3 in the early morning. I walked over there, the chain was undone, and the chain was moving. This is a true story, and so I'm afraid, or is it maybe a friendly, helpful ghost, that the ghost has returned to its origins here on Brant's Lane. Anyway, I didn't plan to talk about that, but I have this, you're the first person to hear about this, a true ghost story, and but I'm only feeling protection from this ghost, if you want to know.
Okay, good.
Want to know the truth.
I have a few ghost stories myself, and but I will entertain you later.
Another time.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you for listening. Now, James, thank you for that story. And but now I want to just talk about, let's talk about the play that you're in right now, The Water Machine. Now, our guest 2 weeks ago was in this play also, and she was whetting her appetite for it. And I, for one, am going to be seeing it this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to just tell us about it.
Okay.
The plot, who's in it, what's your experience and all that.
Okay. The Water Engine and Mr. Happiness are both directed by John Dorner. And the evening begins with myself as an actor in the middle of his radio show, Mr. Happiness, in which he gives advice to listeners who write in. Mr. Happiness can be quite passionate about some of the things he reads. When that's over, I leave and the other actors come in to begin a radio play about a man, Charles Lang, played by Greg King, who invents an engine that runs only on water. His sister is played by Claudia Warga. Lang wants to patent his machine, but the forces of big business, led by myself as the mysterious Mr. Oberman, do not want to see this engine come to life, and we will do just about anything to stop it. Like the radio show at the Gilbert of A Christmas Carol, the line between the radio show, people at microphones, and scenes of action become blurred. We are actors in 2015 doing a play written in 1977 about actors in 1934, putting on a play about an everyman butting heads with big business and corruption and greed. It sounds a little heavy, but it's not really in it.
It sounds too familiar.
Yeah, well, it does demand that audiences pay attention and do some thinking, but it's also a lot of fun. Other local actors in the play are Patty Cucho, who also co-directed, by the way, Denver McCullough, Paul Wilson, James Johnson, Derek Smith, Daniel All, and Clark Graver.
What a cast. Mm-hmm. Now, David Mamet, an early play.
Yes, one of his early ones, and it was originally written as a radio play.
I see. Well, then, hence no swearing.
No, there's no swearing, which is, incredibly unusual for a David Mamet play, but it does have his sharp dialogue. Yeah.
Well, and how this wonderful cast you list there, James, you've worked with these people before, of course. Denver, what you've been with him several times.
Yeah, we did a Sherlock Holmes play up at Harnett Regional Theater once.
But he's such a good character actor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well, all of that whole cast, and Claudia, how we remember Claudia when she was
play ball.
Yeah. She was marvelous in that.
Yeah.
And she's has just grown and grown, and is such a wonderful person to work with, fabulous talent, and a nice lady. So yes, The Water Engine. We'll give dates on that later in our program, but now, James, I'm putting you on the spot. I'd like you to talk about how you approach. Can you give us just a ballpark figure of how many plays you've been in for the last 40-plus years?
Wow, I don't know.
I mean, what would you say, 50?
Maybe, yeah.
Anyway.
I really don't know. I went through, I quit acting for 10 years.
10 years.
In the 90s. No, it was the 80s, possibly.
Uh-huh.
But, and I became a painter, and I painted for 10 years. But
yeah.
I came to the Gilbert and saw a play here, and suddenly I was drawn right back into it. It was easy to have.
Well, wonderful. So anyway, it's numerous plays, and how do you approach?
Well, my process begins with the given circumstance in a play, and I fill in the blanks for myself. And like in Mr. Happiness, Mr. Happiness has no name, he has no visible history, so I took the name of Billy Smiley, and that name and the past I created to go with it work in opposition to the letters that I read aloud on air, so that my past life reinforces the passion of my replies in the guise of Mr. Happiness. I really only use internal work like that if I feel I need it to help me feel comfortable on stage, because the audience, of course, couldn't care less about any history I dreamed up. They hear the words of the play, and they see me and the other actors say them, and they see the set and the technical aspects that go with it. But that's all. It's also very important to me to get the look of the character right as soon as possible, so that when I look at myself in the mirror, I see the character and not the actor. I remember back in 2005 when we did Jeff Baron's play, Visiting Mr. Green. You directed the production, and I played Mr. Green, who was an 86-year-old man. Now, I work from to be quite natural on stage, to be real, to appear not to be acting, even though everybody knows that I'm acting. And at that time, I was only 54 years old. But I think anyone who visited the theater and did not know me saw an 86-year-old man on stage. And it wasn't because I transformed myself with makeup. In fact, I used no makeup. It was my internal mindset, my physicality, my walk, my clothing, my beard, my hair, and even my fingernails, the overall package. Also, in my effort to be natural on stage, I don't mind walking around off stage looking like someone other than who I am. When I did the role of Colonel Hollister, which was also done at the Gilbert, I looked like a thin Colonel Sanders, and believe me, people, strangers, treated me differently in my days as Colonel Hollister. I was not treated politely by the general public servants. As I normally look, they might laugh at certain things I would say, but as Colonel Hollister, there was no laughter. They didn't even want any dialogue from me. None at all.
Yeah. Oh, wow, what a tutorial. Just wonderful, wonderful. I was just, we watched the Tonys the other night and saw that actor doing The Elephant Man. Without
yes.
any makeup at all, but just doing what you were saying, right. just by doing these grotesque things with, like, suggesting it, and as he moved into the part, you could just forgot that it was that he didn't have all this prostheses and all of that on
right.
him.
Right, that's well, how that play should work.
That should work, and thank you for that. That was just brilliant, and it's advice. So given circumstances, you know, there are these wonderful stories from Lynn Font and Fontaine.
Uh-huh.
Lunt and Fontaine, how what they used to do with given circumstances, almost to the point of me being ridiculous. but there, thank you so much. So anything else you want to add to that?
No, that's enough.
That is terrific. Now that we've talked about Water Engine, we've talked about what the process you've used preparing for a part.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have prepared a reading for us.
Right? I have. It's a reading of a play, a monologue from a play that I actually wrote. And this is, I'm in the process of finishing this play. It's called Dancing Through Dinner, and it's about an actor and actress couple, Edward Alton and Alice Levington, and they are well known in Hollywood, have done movies. This takes place in the 30s, and they have a love-hate relationship, and they are at times very verbally assaulting each other, ripping and tearing, until in the end they have to comfort each other because they're trying to keep a secret that a reporter is coming back to check on. So the play opens up with Edward being actually interviewed by the reporter who is in the audience, and we don't know that as an audience mm-hmm. in the beginning, because he appears to be talking to us.
Uh-huh. This is your work.
This is my work, yes. So this is Edward Alton and Dancing Through Dinner.
The lights are up.
You just sit there quietly, and I'll do all the talking from up here. That's what you want anyway, right? Me to keep drinking and talking about this and that while you take note of everything that's said. And eventually you should know all there is to know about Edward Alton and Alice Leffington. If you only knew, it would curl your hair. It would curl mine if I had any left. How about this stage, eh? My idea, not everyone can afford a stage in their living room. What better way for a man to feel at home on stage? Of course, I've always felt at home on stage, and if I seem a little nervous today, it's because I'm afraid I'll let the wrong word slip out and you'll catch me in some lie. Not that I'd lie to you on purpose. It would be purely accidental in nature, perhaps caused by the drink. Ah, that's a good place to start. The drink. Bourbon. There is nothing on earth or in Hollywood, for that matter, quite like it. Nothing. Except, oh, me, perhaps. That's right, I am the bourbon of the theatrical stage. Hollywood has ruined me, of course, like many other actors before me, like it ruins everyone. That's why I return to the New York stage whenever possible to reinvigorate myself. And speaking of reinvigorating myself, yummy, I needed that, a little reinforcement. I know some people think I'm an alcoholic, but I want to let you in on my little secret. I don't mind that some people think that. Oh, I don't. I really don't care what people may think. This much I do know, the drink has never caused me to miss a performance. I admit there have been a number of minor mishaps. I did once speak my last line, then fall off a 10-foot-high platform, but never fear, no broken bones, and I believe no one in the audience was aware of my misfortune. At least I prefer to believe that. I've also passed out after the final curtain several times. Well, it happens, but I repeat, I've never missed a performance, and I've never given a bad performance either. Over the top, perhaps, but never bad. Never. Even my stink smells of parfum de bourbon.
Oh, James, my gosh. So how far along are you in this play?
Well, I've got about 50 pages done, and so I'm cruising along in it if I just find the time to get back. As soon as water engine's over, I have 2 weeks to learn lines for two plays that I'm doing at exactly the same time at the Gilbert for the rep summer show. So I'm not going to be working on anything but learning those lines.
I see. Well, you're amazing. So let's talk during call board. Let's talk about that. That's of course what we should talk about. we can wing it, but okay. But let's talk about that some more during call board. So your thanks for that wonderful play reading. You know, I have to go back to what you said, something you said earlier about your process and visiting Mr. Green. As I look back on you on stage and waiting to go on stage or when sitting around while we're waiting to start or something, my memory of that, I can't believe you were only 54. You seemed, yes, in your 70s and 80s. Oh, wow. That is quite a...
I used to walk around at work preparing for that, and the girls in marketing were there, and it would be late at night because they'd be staying to finish a project or something, and I'd be wandering around there as this old Mr. Green and startle them when I walked by because they wouldn't recognize it was me at all.
Well, no, and you don't. So that's what that brings us back in again and again to the theater. Well, you know, before we, kind of a practical note now here, James, before we started taping this evening, you shared with me a concern you've had about some criticism. You are kind of a hard shell, and you let criticism frequently roll off your back, perhaps not always or often as you would like. We all are sensitive to things that are said that are not perhaps not very complimentary. Then that's when we get out our Conchita dolls and start putting pins in them. I mean, no, that's just a joke, of course. Now, but what we were talking about earlier is that right now you're having someone criticizing you about a scene that you're having in your play, a love scene. And they're saying, my God, the lovemaking is so realistic, they're beginning to think that it is really happening on stage. Now, I thought this is the time to bring St. Genesius in on this, as I have been doing lately, because we should go to you know, a higher level for advice. I'm sure you agree. So I've fashioned this letter, and here it is. And so far, I've been getting good reports from past victims, I mean guests, who have been at the microphone here, and asking them, did you get the help you needed? Dear Saint, and they've been saying yes. Dear Saint Genesius, please advise your faithful follower, James, how to handle some criticism he has been receiving in his play. The criticism revolves around a love scene. Critics say that the love making appears to be real love making. They say this has no place on stage. My advice to James has been to go for it. After all, isn't the goal of the actor always to be real? Dear St. Genesius, your humble player James awaits your guidance before Act Two tonight. Otherwise, who knows? I remain...
Hallelujah!
No, I'm sorry to be laughing. This is very serious.
Very serious business. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think St. Genesius appreciates my laughing at a time like this. But anyway, I must say I remained your devoted follower. Well, anyways...
Well, I hope he agrees to help an atheist, because that's what he'll have to do.
Help a what?
An atheist.
An atheist.
That's what he will have to do.
Well, those people, and my understanding is, they know that you're misdirected. And
so I see.
They act accordingly. Well, let's move on from that rather somber note. Let's time for our quiz.
Uh-oh.
Now, I have been getting feedback about our quiz, and some of it has not been very kind. The recent quiz, a letter to us came and said, how could you do that to your guest? It was absolutely ridiculous. No one knew any of these things, and it was not fun, and you embarrassed your guest. Well, all I can say is just stop listening if you don't like it. That's what I that's what I say to our...
I think I heard you give that advice before.
Anyway, now, James, if you get... I'm not telling you how many you have to get right. There are 15 or 16 questions.
Wow, that many, huh?
And it all has to do with restoration comedy.
Restoration comedy? Oh.
No. No, I'm kidding. I am, James, do you know how demoralizing it is for me to see you yawning during our show?
And he's not talking to me, by the way.
No, may I just say this, James? We're trying our best over here, and yet you sit there and yawn. I'm going to have to call your mother.
I am.
Call his mother.
No,
every
well,
show.
I usually
swear he calls my mom more than I do.
Well, that's what she tells me. But but James, may I say something else? I've been wanting to say it. You know, sometimes the hood makes the monk, and we've had people show up here ready, kind of getting the spirit of the quiz, like the Shakespeare quiz. And one of them came in tights, a doublet, and a sloppy hat, and a feather in it. And he sat here, and I think it helped him. And somebody else came in kind of the kind of thing they used to wear in radio shows. Women came in, they had hats and gloves and suits and all, even though it was on radio. And this person came in dressed that way, and I was so pleased, because it's the kind of spirit that I like to show. It's that kind of show. That's why I appreciate, I know that your name has been kind of a cross for you, James Dean. But I want to say I think it's it shows that you're above all of that, coming in here tonight in tight jeans, a t-shirt, and a cigarette dangling out of your mouth.
Oh, so you don't want to tell them that the AC's broken and we're all sitting here naked.
Well, I'm spending money on this friggin' podcast. I can't afford the AC, so you just have to put up with it. Now, okay, now, if you're successful, James, in doing most of the questions tonight, your gift is going to be one that I think you'll love. Well, I know that you are next to theater. Your favorite medium is film.
It is.
And he is, and anybody who just happens to be in the lobby some night down at the Cameo when some fine film is, we're all about to go in and see a screening of some fine film, we're all a little bit nervous because James Dean is there. And we're afraid, when it's over, I find myself hurrying out because I don't want to make the mistake of saying, I liked it. And then getting a response that might be
well, I hope you liked 100-Year-Old Man.
I loved it.
I did too.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. Okay. But anyway, so the book that you may win if you are really sharp tonight is Shakespeare on Film.
Oh, right.
And it's just a treasure. I'll be interested in considering
what I have to say later.
Well, I find. So often, even though I can't afford to run the AC, I spend quite a bit of money down at the used bookstore. Mm. But the cost is no, when it comes to gifts from my guests, cost is no concern.
I hear you.
Anyway, so that may win. Are you ready for your quiz? Now, I'm going to ask James if he can possibly do it right this time.
You know, I'm seeing spelling errors.
Okay, well, that I don't. I'm not. I really am calling.
If he points out spelling errors, I will point out some things about him in the play.
Well, we don't want to go to there. I'm afraid tonight, James.
Of course, I could point it myself.
Don't tell me you think I'm.
Are we starting?
We're just a minute. I have not misspelled quiz.
No, that's correct. Good.
That's all I want to know. All right, now what I'm going to give you, you're to complete the title. These are well-known plays.
Well-known plays.
I give the beginning of the title, you complete the title. You get extra credit if you give the play right. Number one, The Glass
Menagerie.
Good.
Tennessee Williams.
Number two, good, disappoint. James has managed to do that correctly, I hope, tonight. Good, good. Number two.
number two.
The Importance
of Being Earnest, Oscar Wilde.
All right, number two, correct. Number three, Who's Afraid of
Virginia Woolf? I mentioned that earlier, Edward Albee.
All right, I think these are too easy.
Keep them easy.
No, I see this book slipping out of my grasp. Because what happened was I bought these books and then I regret that I'm giving them away, but that's another story. Number four, Cat on a
Hot Tin Roof, Tennessee Williams.
These are all too easy. All right. Well, I shouldn't be saying that. It's not very nice. Number five, What Price?
Glory.
Oh, I was hoping that. I thought that might trip you up.
It did. Because that's a movie. Price Glory?
And who wrote it? He writes in verse.
I don't know.
Well, okay, that you're losing half a point.
No,
Maxwell Anderson.
I can lose that.
All right, number six, Baby.
Baby what?
Baby.
Baby?
Baby.
Baby Doll? Tennessee Williams.
Baby Doll, good. Number seven, An Ideal.
An Ideal. Husband?
Yes,
I don't know.
Yes. Wow, I pulled that one. Okay, that was by.
I don't know.
Oscar Wilde. Okay, that's a full point taken. We have to be strict about this, James. I'm sorry. There are rules here that are...
Be strict. I've already won the
book. Not necessarily.
Uh-oh.
Okay, well, no, we have to finish before Uh-oh. We... This Uh-oh. Number eight, Uh-oh. The Skin of Our...
Teeth.
By
Thornton Wilder?
Yes. Number nine, Lady Windermere's...
Fan. Oscar Wilde.
Oscar Wilde. Camino
Real?
Well, I think
Tennessee
it's
Waves.
I think they pronounce it Real. No, Camino Real. Really, but of course, in Spanish, nevertheless, I'm trying to be erudite here.
Camino
Real. Camino Real is the way that he liked to pronounce it.
Really?
Camino Real.
I didn't hear him say that.
Yeah. The Spanish say Camino Real, of course, but he thought it Camino Real. I'm trying to resist being erudite this evening. Because it
please do.
Because it frequently gets me in trouble, uh-huh, and at a certain restoration play starring Mrs. Malaprop comes into people's minds. Number 11, Summer and
Smoke
by
Tennessee Williams.
Now, I really hope that Robin Parrish, our new artistic director, newish artistic director, does that play one time. I saw it with Dorothy McGuire in San Francisco years ago. I loved it. Number 12, The Eccentricities of...
The Eccentricities of... I do not know.
A Nightingale, Tennessee Williams.
Oh.
An early play.
Eccentricities.
Of a Nightingale. Number 13, Cap's Last...
Hmm?
Crap's Last...
Chance?
Crap's Last...
No, I don't.
Tape.
No, I don't.
Beckett. A View from the...
Bridge...
By
Arthur Miller.
Arthur Miller. Come Back, Little
Sheba.
By.
I can't remember off the top of my
head. Inch. And the last one, The League of.
The League of Red Haired Women.
Youth. by Ibsen, a very early Ibsen play. It was rarely.
Oh,
James.
Please,
so you're not going to count The League of Redheaded Women by Charlie Ruggles?
No. Because
okay.
I will accept that. Some would say that I was trying to tip you up so you wouldn't win the book.
But, some might say that.
But it's not true. It's not true. James, how did you do?
Well, he got.
James needs a calculator to do this.
I know.
Count all my double points, too.
I think we established last episode that actors can't do math. But
did he win Shakespeare on film?
I believe that he did. He got the majority of them right.
Well, honey, you don't know how many he had. How many did he have wrong?
He had
three?
Half. Of one, another
say,
half of
say
one.
This is beyond James. I'm sorry. God.
You didn't just count those checks.
He had four
six,
wrong.
8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. He's got 16 checks on the first page.
Yeah, but there were only 16 total, and you didn't
17,
get them all.
17, 18, 19, 20, 21. But I got bonus.
Okay.
Bonus checks.
All right.
Yeah, the bonus checks.
So that's 21
James,
checks.
I'm going to have to give this to you. This task, the quiz task, of tallying to somebody else every week. Anyway, okay, I'm not.
You should give it to the person taking the quiz.
Anyway, it's great. With great reluctance, I give you this book.
Okay,
Shakespeare on
thank
film.
You. Shakespeare on
oh,
film.
Oh God, this is a heavy cross I'm wearing here.
I know it is.
Now, okay, where are we? Okay, we've come now to book sharing, and I'm going to let you share first. James, what we do each week, if you're new to our show, is we have our guest bring a book. They've been very, have used in the past.
Uh-huh.
I've loved it very much. And James, you've chosen such a book, and what is it?
Yes, I have. I've chosen a book by David Mamet called True and False. I understand it's possible that somebody else has already presented this book. But
I don't
you know
think...
what? I think that's great.
I do too.
If they did. Because it is a wonderful book with a lot of insight about acting. And it's funny because I think of it as a Bible for acting, and he says many things in it that I simply don't agree with.
Huh.
And yet he says many things in it that I do agree with.
Just like
and
the real Bible. There's
that,
a lot of there.
Well, that's possible. Yeah. Yes, he does. When the actual courage of the actor is coupled with the lines of the playwright, the illusion of character is created.
Could you read that again?
When the actual courage of the actor is coupled with the lines of the playwright, the illusion of character is created.
Whoa. Well,
he says things like that throughout this play, and throughout this book, and I just think it's really worth reading for every actor out there.
What a recommendation! What a quote! I was reading you read so many things and you forget who to attribute it to whom correctly, but it said there are really two key ingredients to any play. It's the actor and the playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so thank you for that. Well, the book I'm sharing this week is called Breath and Speak. I can't even read it right. Breathe and Speak, A Scene Book for Actors by Mark Clumpton. This is the best scene book I've ever come across. You know, down at the Gilbert Library, down there on Bow Street, mm-hmm. we have a wonderful theater library. And it has, it's good, probably 10 or so books, scene books, just for women, just for men, or a combination. Mm-hmm. This is for everybody. Male-female scenes, female-female scenes, and so on.
I'd like to see that one.
And then the what did I say?
He's female, making a female dirty joke.
Well, this is a family show, Jane.
Lynn's a classy gentleman. He's grazing
right,
over there.
Right. But these are not scenes that you've seen anywhere else. I've read some of them, and I'm so tempted to do them on the show. As a tribute to our author, Mark Clopton, with attribution and further plugs, but this perhaps will be another time. But I can't recommend it highly enough. If there's one thing that people who sometimes come to me and say, you know, I'm going to audition someplace, I'm School of the Arts, or there, can you recommend any, mm-hmm. any scene work? And this is the one that I'm going to recommend from now on.
Good for you.
All right. So we had that's our book sharing. Now it's time to go to the mailbox. Now James has been listened in to so many really unkind, unthoughtless letters.
Really?
Coming our way.
What about the good one?
Well, that's what I'm waiting for. The very first one said to me, in a nice way, I guess, as it was somebody I knew coming from the Philippines, saying, be sure to keep your day job. Well, this is my day job. But nevertheless, I know there's plenty of people out there who wish us well. But this is one that I want to share, a letter. There's one interesting letter in the mailbox this week, James. The writer asks, do we realize that radio waves go racing into the universe, just on and on and on to this ever-expanding universe, carrying our show into distant places? This includes our humble show, of course. The writer wants to know which segment of our show are we most eager to share with those people out there on other planets. So the possibility of pointy ears in some remote corner of our galaxy picking up our show is very exciting. So I've thought about this, James, and I have to say, the St. Genesius segment, where solid advice is discussed, is what I would give I'm most proud of.
I see the one that only you are involved in. That's a good choice.
Well, no, where else are these other terrestrial people to get advice about the ins and outs of handling upstaging? We did a whole thing about that, how to do it so the actors don't even know it's happening to them.
Ooh.
And then tips on auditioning. Say your things are not going well, with you just have a sense that you don't have any kind of chance of getting the part. How you can sabotage other people who are better than you are. It's this kind of thing that going out in there in the universe. That's what I'm so proud of. Another thing that I'm proud of is our Shakespeare sonnets. I can just picture multi-headed actors learning and reciting those lines. I just hope they get the rhythm right. Perhaps even a choral reading with all those heads. James, we do what we can.
I see.
All right, now we go from our mailbox, and not a minute too soon, to birthdays. Now, do we know any local birthdays? Goodness knows mine is coming up, but there'll be plenty said about that this on the July 14th broadcast, just in case anyone wants to remember my birthday. Bastille Day is always a way to remember. But even though someone...
Yes, because I always remember Bastille Day.
Yeah, everybody does.
Well, everybody does. Now, I shouldn't even... But I am saying it because people reach a certain age, people think birthdays don't matter. They do matter. And this is why I'm mentioning it today and probably next week and on whenever I can, because I don't like to be ignored. But anyway, these are the ones that I'm remembering.
You should have your own Facebook group, and then wish you happy birthday.
You're talking to a Luddite here who's never been on Facebook and will never be on Facebook. But anyway, just as the birthday of Joseph Papp, director-producer, born on this day, 1922, Catherine Dunham, dancer, choreographer, born on this date in 1910, still going strong, doing all of those lifts and stretches. Meryl Streep, born this very day in 1949. Isn't it a shame her career has faltered so?
Yes.
Bob Fosse, born on this date in 1927.
Isn't it a shame that he is dead?
Yeah, it's terrible for his career.
There's not much you can do about that. Now, we're starting something brand new, James, and I see both James in the room, James Johnson and James Dean, are blanching as I reach for our brand new stopwatch.
No.
Because what we're going to do is I'm going to give you 60 seconds, timed by this state-of-the-art Sportline stopwatch. What direction you... What changes would you like to see, either to the changes you'd like to see, or that would enhance theater in changes or enhancements in theater in Contra Costa County?
Okay, and remember what I said, which was that how can I offer any changes that would make a difference when I'm sitting next to a man who has spent his whole life fighting for change in theater here.
Oh, how nice of you to say
so
that.
So you've won that battle right from the start.
Thank you. All right, thank you, and I start it right now.
Okay, in the words of Mr. Happiness, these ideas do not originate here. I just echo them. Stop relying on Shakespeare. Shakespeare may be the greatest playwright in history, but he's so dated that new productions are always trying desperately to update him. Even I've liked some of his tragedies, but I've never seen a good production in one of his comedies. Stop performing the same musicals over and over. Stop spoon-feeding the audiences what you think they want and let them get used to the new works you give them. Continue to have revivals of great plays by great playwrights, but remember that old audiences die out. You've got to give your new audiences some fresh air to breathe. In your face, crazy theater. Local theaters should help local playwrights develop their plays, and some new plays should be crazy theater. New plays that encourage audience participation, sell upfront seats for less, and encourage young audiences to fill those seats so they can boo and heckle and shout out at the characters. I read somewhere that Rocky Horror Picture Show only survives because it's the one play out there where people are encouraged to mess with it. Give them more shows they can mess with. New York actors. New York actors are actors that live in New York, but they are not necessarily better than actors anywhere else. Local actors are expected to support these New York actors, but what would you do if the local actor said no more? Without them, you have no shows. Stop pretending to pay local actors gas money and pay them a fair wage for what they are really doing for you, putting in a lot of time and a lot of work while they're still off working during the day.
Wow. My gosh, James. That was...
Yes, I said a lot, and I know.
No. And I'm thank God you went over with just a little bit over the 60 minutes. I'm turning this off. And that was... I could have written that myself. And I'm going to, I'm glad that this is going out to other planets as well as next door, down the street, up the hill, wherever it needs to go, because that was a brilliant statement, a credo that needs to be repeated and repeated. And, you are something else. Thank you so much. I'm glad we started this new 60-second segment of our show with you. What a high mark you have set. Now, let's talk about Colborne. Now, you know, we have 10 theaters in our region, the Gilbert Theater, Cape Fear Regional, Cameo. I include Cameo Art House Cinema, and they'll call it theater, because occasionally we have live shows there. Mm-hmm. Methodist University, Reeves Auditorium, and then Reeves Stage on Stage when they perform on stage. Fayetteville Tech, the Cumberland Hall Auditorium, Fayetteville State, Butler, and Seabrook, the Poe House Garden Stage, the Temple Theater. So those are our performing spaces. We have 10 of them, as I'm happy to say. But right now, we only have a production that is going on, I think, on one of them, as far as I know, and that is the play we've been talking about, The Water Engine. The Water Engine.
And Mr. Happiness.
And
there
Mr.
are two plays.
Two plays, Mr. Happiness. And can you give us dates?
Yes, well, we have one more weekend left. That's Friday the 26th at 7, Saturday the 27th at 7, and Sunday the 28th at 2 p.m.
I do think that is it for our call board. Say something about what you're going to do at the Gilbert this summer.
Oh, the Gilbert's going to do some, their rep group is going to do some summer theater, and they're doing a number of short plays, and people from New York are coming down to do it as well. And we're all going to work together and put on these plays all at the same time. Like I'm doing, I will be doing two plays at the same time, having to learn the lines for both of them. And I believe in at least one day, I'm doing one play in the afternoon and the next play that night. So it's going to be quite a lot of work, and I hope I make it through it and still am alive when we're done.
Well, James, I can't wait. I'm going to see The Water Engine and Mr. Happy.
Happiness.
I'm going to be going this weekend. And so there's our call board, and I think we've very sadly come to this wonderful, wonderful visit with you. You're a marvelous friend, marvelous a performer, and it's been such a treat to have you on our number 7, our lucky 7 show. And I may not even call James's mother, because he has been most attentive since that yawn.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm ready to end the show now. But before I do, I'm going to be asking this question, and I don't want an answer. But I'm asking from now on to all of our guests. And I'll be giving the answer sometime in the future. James, what is the universal question?
I don't know the answer to that.
I do know the answer. And I'm going to share it sometime in the future. What is the universal question? What is the universal question? It's going to save the world.
Okay.
Now, time for me to say, this is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. See me back where the boys are.